From Altoona to York, Lebanon to Indiana, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Josh Shapiro dropped the ball on Pennsylvania's participation in the Great American State Fair. But Senators John Fetterman and Dave McCormick picked it up and scored a touchdown. David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Stephen Bloom are here for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And the meteoric rise of the socialist left has created a time for choosing in the Democrat Party. But the GOP also faces an ideological divide. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. A U.S. Supreme Court ruling this past week affirmed the right of biological women to be protected from having biological men compete in their athletic events. As a result of that ruling, State Representatives Barb Gleim of Cumberland County and Clint Owlett of Tioga County called on the Pennsylvania Interscholastic Athletic Association, better known as the PIAA, and school boards across the Commonwealth to, quote, protect their girl athletes by immediately enacting policies that comply with the High Court's ruling. It should be noted, there's widespread public support for such protections, which are now constitutionally guaranteed. Broad and Liberty reports, quote, a top official with PennOn, the nonprofit that oversees the PBS-affiliated television station WITF in Harrisburg, filed a whistleblower lawsuit alleging financial misconduct by the nonprofit's management that diverted millions in public grants, charitable donations, and endowment funds to benefit a donor family and a top executive. A statement issued by PennOn denied the allegations, claiming the resultant judicial proceedings will validate its actions. The Democrat-dominated Pennsylvania Supreme Court has given State Attorney General Dave Sunday the authority to review the work of Philadelphia prosecutors who have sought to overturn murder convictions they deem unjust. Far-left Progressive District Attorney Larry Krasner initiated the effort to overturn the convictions. Sunday termed the Supreme Court's ruling, quote, unprecedented. He vowed to, quote, apply the law and the facts to the issue. The High Court's intervention is a rebuke to Krasner, who was the target of a failed legislative impeachment attempt over his soft-on-crime approach. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. This weekend, we celebrate the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. The Great American State Fair is part of that celebration, but Governor Josh Shapiro decided the Keystone State would not participate. Enter U.S. Senators John Fetterman and Dave McCormick, who saved the day. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation are here for a Capitol Watch discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks for being on the program.
It's great to be here again, David. Thank you.
Great to be with you. And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
Well, and warm best wishes to everyone for a happy Independence Day, happy 4th of July, happy America 250. For all of the imperfections and all of the feuding and fussing between our fractured populace, America's still going. And so it's what did Churchill say, that the Americans always do the right thing after they've exhausted every other option? It's like, yes, we have, as he also said, that we have the worst system except for all the others.
And this whole celebration of our 250th birthday as a nation kind of took me back, and I started thinking, we're hearing all the talk about it, and you start thinking, what was I doing back in 1976 during
the bicentennial?
Because I was alive and kicking back then, and I have some memories of it. And I guess one of the memories I have that stands out the most is my mom and my brother and I. I was 15, my brother is, I think, 11. My mom took us on a cross-continental trip to visit relatives that we have out in Washington State, in Spokane.
Wow, okay.
And so she had, with her parents, gone on a trip across the Trans-Canadian highway. And so that's what she wanted to repeat and give my brothers the chance to see the stuff she always talked about from her childhood trip out that way. And so for about a week and a half or so on the way out, we were not in America. We were in Canada.
Okay.
And we were, without planning or intending for things to go this way, we all started to really miss the United States and being home. And when we finally crossed there, we had to take a ferry from Vancouver through the bay to get into Washington, and we got back onto U.S. soil. It felt so good. We were celebrating in time for the actual event. So we did plan our trip right before it, and we got there right as it was kicking off. So it was just really neat to think about. I'd kind of forgotten about all the details of that memory, and kind of thinking back, that really meant a lot, and it showed me a lot about the scope of our nation by comparing and contrasting being in another nation where you don't have God-given rights.
Yes.
In many cases that we take for granted here.
Yes, you're a subject of the king. So I think about 1976, and I was a little guy. I was only 7 years old, but there was a lot of pageantry that we made, tricorn hats out of black construction paper and that kind of stuff, and it seemed like all of the TV shows and comic books and whatever, that they all had bicentennial themes and such. It was interesting. So in my hometown, that in 1976, one of the local civic groups had built a time capsule to be left behind, to be opened in the far distant year of 2026. And so that big fiberglass tank has just been cracked open, and various artifacts and letters and messages and things that had been left behind. I don't know that they've discovered it yet, but I do remember what I put in. And again, little Davey, 7 years old, that I put in the logo, the cardboard logo off of one of the toy boxes of my $6 million man action figures.
Yes.
So that was my gift for posterity. What can you do? What do you remember from those days?
Well, I was a little tiny tyke. I was only two in 1976, but I do remember it. I remember my mom taking me to see the bicentennial wagon train, which went across Pennsylvania at the time, and I have very vague memories of it, but I remember everybody being dressed up in, in period costumes and getting to climb up on the wagon train and seeing all the hoopla associated with this wagon train that camped out in downtown Chambersburg where we lived. And it was just, I just remember the feelings and the excitement about it, about the time, and everyone was just very very excited, and everyone had their flags out, and everyone was dressed in red, white, and blue. And I remember specifically the red, white, and blue snow cones.
The
sticky hands,
Yes.
So I was only two, but I definitely do remember the excitement.
That's
of
all
the time,
artificial dye. Secretary Kennedy does
not
approve.
No, it's not
that
good anymore. Yeah. No, we don't do that anymore. So. But yeah, it was an exciting time for sure. So here we are 50 years later.
And it was great. And I do, from what I remember of it, it does seem that it was more of a rallying point, that it was more unifying than perhaps. I think that the current celebration is still pretty celebratory, but there have been some sour grapes. There have been some. Pointless feuding over stuff. I'm grateful that despite a false start, that the Pennsylvania Pavilion on the National Mall in Washington, what they're calling the Great American State Fair, with all 50 states, well, most of the states participating, and that the Pennsylvania Pavilion was not going to be staffed or populated with any, Pennsylvania type artifacts or exhibits and stuff. So fortunately, that U.S. Senator Dave McCormick stepped into the breach. He, his office called me, and certainly that Pennsylvania Manufacturers was very glad to join in the effort, and other groups like Penn Ag and the Farm Bureau and NFIB Pennsylvania and the Pennsylvania Chamber, that we've all mobilized. And so here for Independence Day, I'm glad to say that the Pennsylvania Pavilion is strong. Lots of Pennsylvania companies have sent exhibits and signage and sent their wares to be shared, Middlesworth potato chips and lots of other good Pennsylvania swag. Actually, I think there's a Pennsylvania truck company that is got their showing their signs there.
Yes, Mack Trucks, proud Pennsylvania brand. Happy that they're represented there. And it's like you said, David, it was going to be really embarrassing to have the birthplace of America not represented at that state fair. So we're really happy that that came together and is really representing the best of Pennsylvania, and really excited that that's happening. So hoping that I'll get a chance to see it this weekend, because
yes.
It sounds really,
yes,
really exciting.
And it's, you know, that Jimmy Stewart is from Indiana County, Pennsylvania. It reminds me of the end of It's a Wonderful Life, where everybody's pitching in to save the Old Bailey building and loan. So, yeah, so it's a frustrating sort of thing that we had this hiccup, but very glad that Senator McCormick and Senator Fetterman were able to get the job done.
And in Pennsylvania, I think there's several reasons why this is especially important to our Commonwealth, but one of those is it is a Commonwealth full of cities, villages, countryside, of people who are active in their communities. And that really, when you think about de Tocqueville and when he visited Pennsylvania or visited America, the things he observed about Americans is that they tended to just organize and make things happen on their own without waiting for the government to step in or asking
yes.
the government if it would step in. And I think that spirit, we think of 1976, was that the same as it is today? I think it is. I think it looks different. People are on their electronic devices now instead of their front porches, sadly. But there is a lot about Pennsylvania. It's a community-driven state, and we often, partly because of the geography, it's complicated and confusing, and the weather is changeable, and there's oftentimes we have to care for our fellow Pennsylvanians and just step out and do it, not wait for someone to give us permission. So that kind of got me thinking just about what it was like in those hills of Pennsylvania and those cities in Pennsylvania back then. Again, maybe a simpler time, at least in terms of communication and information, but any different in terms of the spirit and soul of the Pennsylvania citizens? I don't think so.
Yeah, I would agree with that entirely, and that Pennsylvanians also have a very powerful attachment to their hometowns and the places that they're from and the places where they grew up, and that it's been fun to see the kind of pride that's inspired by, like, Knoebels Amusement Park in Elysburg. Like, so many people have wonderful memories of that place, and to see one of their famous, white park benches on display at the Pavilion, that it gets people fired up. It's a I don't know what to call it, like positive association of things that they love about the place that they're from.
You know, as you were talking about the positive associations, and I sort of think back to my childhood, and you think about how, this is kind of funny, but how much snack foods in Pennsylvania are associated with childhood memories, right?
Yes.
I know Middlesworth chips mm-hmm. is represented down
in Utz is there,
Utz
too.
Utz is there, right? And in Chambersburg, we had Gibble's chips.
Mm-hmm.
So I know a lot of people have a lot of really good memories of their local snack foods. So Pennsylvania is well known for that. And those are good, local memories that we have. So.
America's snack food capital.
Absolutely.
That's part of our manufacturing. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor, from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. So, there's a lot to take heart from. And Steve, to your point, we wind up being consumed by the issues and the passions of the moment. But when you do step back, take a deep breath, take a deeper look, that it is heartening to see some of those same qualities remain with us. Neighbor helping neighbor, and love of country and love of community, and just stepping up when you're needed. I think about my hometown and the long tradition of community service organizations, whether it's the, Kiwanis or the Rotary or Knights of Columbus or the Lions Club or the JCs or, you name it, volunteer fire companies, other church service organizations that reflects the spirit of our people.
And it's that mediation of institutions that help us to, again, to not always have to go to the government for everything. We can handle a lot of things ourselves because we have the the ambition to get out there and do it, and the need is there.
Well, I think we had a really unique opportunity these past couple of weeks with the FIFA World Cup and the visitors here to America, because if you've watched those videos, just the shock and awe at some of the opportunity and the abundance here in the United States that we all take for granted.
Yes.
And that is a result of exactly what Steve's talking about. It's a result of entrepreneurship. It's a result of American ingenuity and American, you know, drive to get things done and do things. And that is how we've been successful. And that, like you said, has not gone away. It's a little different in some ways now than it was 50 years ago, but it's still there.
Yeah, and so we Pennsylvanians can argue about whether Sheetz is better than Wawa,
sure.
And of course it is, but that, you know, or whether you prefer a Rutter's or a Turkey Hill or what have you. But the, you know, that we are blessed with such an abundance of choices. And a bounty of goods and services and products that for a European to go into an American grocery store or an American convenience store, that it really is just the only word is unbelievable. Like, I'm here and I'm seeing it, but wow, look at all of this, all of these wonderful things. And it's right here, right now. And oh, by the way, a mile down the road, there's a whole nother one of these things with a whole nother set of good things. And that the visitors, I guess they're mostly Europeans, but also people from other parts of the world, you know, that America is not at all like they expected it to be. The American people are not like they expected us to be.
My wife literally called me over to her computer to see and start to hear some of the YouTube testimonies of Europeans who were just blown away by the United States and our hospitality and the quality of our life.
And the one fellow said, it's like, well, I guess they can be so nice because they're so rich, which is another strange way of looking at it. But it is true that our bounty and our success have given us security in abundance, and that this is part of what liberates us from the more like urgent needs of poorer countries that lack infrastructure, that lack functional economies, that lack, you know, all of those things. That because, and of course, our problem now is that we're on the other side of it, that we've had it so good for so long in so many ways that we just assume that that's the way the world is supposed to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, for them to see us, it helps us to remember of how blessed we are. And how grateful we should be that our American system of constitutional representative self-government and individual liberty and free enterprise and freedom of conscience and all those things work together to make America the great success that we are.
Thinking about the parts of Pennsylvania that jump right out at me when you talked about the needs beyond our shores often, battles, World War I, World War II. You think right away when you think about those great world struggles that the standout, the state that produced the things that were needed to win those wars is Pennsylvania.
Absolutely, yes.
With Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Allentown and the steelmakers that they were the best in the world at what they did, and the quality of their work was the highest in the world, and they cranked it out to make sure that this country would remain intact.
Well, and our fighting forces, our fighting men, that, I mean, the Pennsylvania Deer Hunter has been the backbone of the U.S. Army going all the way back to 1775, that in the War of Independence, that many of the significant battles were fought here, you know, in the Commonwealth. That you think about the war to save the Union and to destroy the Southern slave power, that Pennsylvania provided by far the most men who fought and the most materiel to fight and win that war. And again, Steve, just like you say, that Pennsylvania's industry, you know, made it possible for America to contribute to the efforts in the world wars. And they say that America is the indispensable nation. And I think that's true. Talk about American exceptionalism, which does not mean that we're awesome no matter what we do. American exceptionalism means that there is a role in the world that only America can play in terms of global leadership to to oversee a global order where every nation is treated. Look, there are rules that apply to everybody, that the U.S. isn't in it to just like plunder everybody else. When the U.S. Navy maintains the openness of the seas, including the Straits of Hormuz, which is international waters, nobody gets to block that off, toll it, and control it. Like, this is a role that only we can play because, again, because of our bounty and our strength, and that we have been protected by oceans on both sides for all these years, all these centuries.
Well, and it's interesting to think about how critical we have been in Pennsylvania has been in the history of America, and sort of turn that around and think where we're going to be in the future. And I think, you know, we talk a lot on this show about the criticality of Pennsylvania from an energy standpoint.
Yep.
We're the number two producer of energy in the United States. And America is one of the top producers of energy in the world
that
now, which is completely different than it was back in 1976. We've reversed that trend altogether. So Pennsylvania is positioned to be a leader in the world in the future, if nothing else by virtue of its energy, in many other ways as well. As we've talked about the incredible people that we have here, the educational resources we have in Pennsylvania, the industry, all of the abundance that we have here in Pennsylvania that we are set to lead in the future as well.
And this is one of the points that I try to get across, which is, you know, again, Pennsylvania is famously parochial, and that we don't often have leadership that looks outside the 67 counties. But Pennsylvania has really important contributions to make to American economic and industrial and technological strength.
Absolutely.
And that we should want America to be a global leader. We should want Pennsylvania to be able to make the maximum contribution to all of those different types of national strength. And so this means that leadership in Harrisburg and state policymaking decisions have national repercussions.
Yes.
And so, again, we're all in for a bountiful, prosperous Pennsylvania to help supercharge the American economy, and I think that makes for a glorious fourth. Well, as always, I'm grateful for my good friends and being able to kick it around and talk about things and to have freedom of speech, freedom of the airways, that we still live in a great and blessed land where we are a free people who are fit to govern ourselves. So we're out of time. I will stop waxing rhapsodic. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the things that you do?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org.
And Rebecca, where can people learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at PMTA.org.
And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. From Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks for listening. Have a glorious fourth. God bless America. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
On October 27, 1964, Ronald Reagan delivered a speech designed to help salvage Senator Barry Goldwater's sinking presidential campaign. It did not accomplish that goal, but what became known as the A Time for Choosing speech catapulted Reagan to national fame. It was indeed a turning point for the nation and for the Republican Party's conservative wing, which was fighting an ideological battle against the then-dominant moderate or Rockefeller wing of the party. It took until the presidential election of 1980 for Reagan and conservatives to prevail. Today, both the Republican and Democrat parties are facing a new time of choosing. The choices they make will define not only their parties, but the future of America's free enterprise system, and in fact of capitalism itself. The Democrat Party is facing what famed political consultant James Carville has termed a schism. His comments came following the primary election victories of three so-called Democratic Socialist congressional candidates in New York City. The trio were supported by New York's communist mayor, Zoran Mamdani, along with other far-left notables, including Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the socialist oligarch U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders. The Democrat Socialist movement has taken strong root in the nation's most left-wing cities, including Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson and soon-to-be Washington, D.C. Mayor Janice Lewis George. In Maine, Democrats nominated a socialist adorned with a Nazi tattoo on his chest for the U.S. Senate. This, along with other pending socialist victories, has Carville sputtering, quote, "If it's such a powerful, sweeping movement that's got momentum everywhere, then go ahead and be at the head of it. Don't use the Democratic Party to advance it," end quote. Following their New York City congressional victories, Pennsylvania's U.S. Senator John Fetterman called the socialists, quote, "the dirtbag left," and has engaged in a war of words with Maine U.S. Senate nominee Graham Platner. While the socialist left is winning in heavily urban strongholds, their far-left positions are toxic elsewhere. Carville and Fetterman are correct in understanding that Donald Trump and Republicans will paint traditional Democrats with the socialist brush, which could be decisive in competitive congressional districts in November and render the party uncompetitive in the 2028 presidential election. The Republican Party is also facing a time for choosing, although the divide is far less deep and relatively easy to bridge. There is no doubt that President Donald Trump is the most dominant figure in the party and will remain so through the 2028 election cycle. His businesslike approach to governing, coupled with populist rhetoric, appeals to and motivates what has broadly been termed the MAGA movement. But there are important policy differences between MAGA populists and Reagan-style conservatives. Populism is a governing strategy, not an ideology. That doesn't make it bad, but for a political party to remain cohesive, it must have an underlying ideological base. The Democrat Party has suffered a schism because it no longer has a unifying ideological underpinning. It is safe to say that most voters who consider themselves to be MAGA also consider themselves to be conservatives. But they are more willing to stray from conservative principles in the name of pragmatism than are Reagan conservative devotees. The right is blessed with a robust network of think tanks and policy organizations that give the GOP the ideological base the Democratic Party lacks. There is, however, some friction within the ranks. The Venerable Heritage Foundation has tilted incrementally toward the populist position, opening the door for organizations such as Advancing American Freedom, where traditional conservatives have found a home. That is not to say that any of this is necessarily bad. Unlike the left, which requires rigid adherence to its policy objectives, ask John Fetterman about that, conservatives tend to think for themselves, resulting in robust policy debates that ultimately make the movement and, by extension, the Republican Party stronger. This tension has also manifested itself in primary election battles, such as that which saw stalwart conservative Thomas Massie lose his primary re-election bid after pushing purity past the point of voter acceptance. Where that line lies can sometimes be difficult to ascertain. After the 2026 midterm elections, where that line lies will become the big debate within the Republican Party. President Trump will continue to be a dominant force, but his influence on the 2028 elections will largely be determined by the outcome of the 2026 midterms. Reagan-style conservatism will remain the party's ideological base, but after November, the GOP will have a time for choosing as to how far from that it wishes to stray. The Republican time for choosing is far less stark than that which confronts Democrats. It is, however, no less important. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 31 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WMBS AM and FM in Uniontown, along with WERG FM at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Frederick W. Anton III Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.